Take the case under advisement. Our next case for this morning, the fifth case, is United States against Dwayne White. Mr. Maximovich.
May it please the court, I'm John Maximovich and I represent the appellant Dwayne White. This case presents a situation where both parties appear to have been confused or misunderstood the court's sentencing authority. Mr. White pled guilty pursuant to a plea agreement to distribution of 50 grams or more of crack cocaine. As part of the plea agreement, he waived his appellate rights. He agreed and stipulated that the amount of crack cocaine attributable to him was 50 to 150 grams of crack. He also waived all of his rights under the Freedom of Information Act. In exchange, the government made a series of non-binding recommendations for Mr. White.
But Mr. Maximovich, to cut to the chase, we see situations a lot where the eventual detailed investigation in the pre-sentence report disappoints the defendant who's about to be sentenced, and the plea agreement doesn't say, it's not one of those plea agreements that says this sentence is going to be 120 months or whatever, you know, the sentence could be 50 months or anything. It says, if my criminal history qualifies me for safety valve treatment. There's an if in there. And so it's hard for me to see why this is anything but, a case where he's disappointed. In fact, it doesn't. Everybody may have thought it was going to at first, but they knew that it was up in the air.
Well, if we look at paragraph 7C of the plea agreement, which basically is the paragraph that contains...
Yeah, that's what I was looking at.
...contains the agreements of the parties, there are five subsections there. And this if language is in...
Subpart C.
In subpart C. But it's not in A, B, it's not in D, nor is it in E.
Why does that matter?
Well,
if only pertained to the safety valve.
For clarity's sake, and also it seems that Mr. White at least had the right to assume that the court could consider these recommendations that were made by the government. As it turned out, because of his criminal history category, he had two criminal history points. The court didn't even have the discretion to consider the recommendations that were made by the government. They were empty promises.
Well, except I guess to the extent that they were promises is really what's before us. You're quite right that once he's not eligible for the safety valve, everything else falls apart, you know, because these other concessions are, because of the statutory minimum, have no bite. But there is this. The judge said, as I recall, you know, maybe it could have even been a more thorough warning, but that's never been required. I mean, no one has ever said to the district judge that he's got to spell out what happens if you don't get safety valve treatment, for example.
No, but still it's a little bit inducive or what the word is, I don't want to say deceptive, to offer the defendant seven levels worth of guideline reductions when he in reality doesn't qualify for them. And he pled guilty, and he got absolutely no benefit from pleading guilty that I can see
What's the detriment, other than the formality that he, of course, he could have had a trial before a jury and so on. You have actually a confidential source buying this rather substantial amount of crack. And so is there any world in which he would not have had a sentence of 120 months?
Well, it was a confidential source, but he didn't buy the crack directly from Mr.
Right,
White.
This other guy, they come up in the car.
Mr. White hooked him up and was involved to that extent. But the detriment is he gave up all his trial rights. He gave up his appellate rights.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what, as a practical matter in this particular, you know, what might have been the arguments that would have persuaded a trier of fact to acquit, or what would have been the arguments on appeal?
The arguments to persuade the trier of fact to acquit would be that his participation in this act of distribution was merely hooking up the seller with the person that wanted to purchase it over the phone. A phone call was made to Mr. White to find this individual that had the crack, to supply it to the confidential informant and a police officer.
But he jumped. As they get caught, he dashes away. He does. I don't know. I mean, it's not really here nor there, because I think the fact is he signs a plea agreement. It includes an appeal waiver. It also, though, includes this conditional language about the safety valve. So that's where we are, I think.
Yes, it does. And my point looking at it, I don't know, my time might have run out. My point looking at it is the government certainly could have been more clear. They could have included that if language in the other paragraphs so that he would have known. As it turns out, he really didn't.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ms. Chang Adiga.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Jennifer Chang Adiga on behalf of the United States. I'll just briefly address the main issue, why we're here today, what was just being discussed with counsel. What we have here is not a mutual mistake that goes to the essential parameters of the plea agreement, as the appellant is arguing. Rather, what we have here is an appellant who has incorrectly estimated his sentence, which, as this Court has made clear, is not a fair and just reason justifying withdrawal of a plea agreement. In order to determine the validity of the appellant's argument, this Court should look to whether the defendant's expectation in this case is contradicted by the sworn testimony from his plea colloquy. And it does here. It does exactly that. The sworn testimony of the appellant, Mr. White, is presumed to be truthful. And from looking at the record of the colloquy, we see that Mr. White understood that the mandatory minimum in this case was 10 years imprisonment. We see that Mr. White understood that his receipt of safety valve treatment was wholly conditional on his criminal history, which would be discovered by the U.S. Probation Office. And we also see from the record of the colloquy that Mr. White understood that it was the judge who would make the ultimate determination of the sentence based on the Probation Office's findings. Your Honors, Mr. White also argues that he has a fair and just reason for withdrawing his guilty plea because he was not specifically advised that were he not to qualify for safety valve treatment, the other reduction recommendations made by the government would have no practical effect on his sentence. And as the district court pointed out in its opinion and order denying the defendant's motion to withdraw his guilty plea, the fact that Mr. White did not qualify for safety valve treatment did not prevent the government from carrying out its other essential terms of the agreement. In essence, the government made promises to Mr. White that it would make recommendations for those reductions, did not make any promises that they would have any practical effect on his sentence. And the fact remains,
Tom Frost is a little disingenuous, I have to say. I mean, had there not been this safety valve thing, I'm sure the government doesn't go around promising to recommend reductions that you know for a fact will have no effect.
That's absolutely true, Your Honor. And at the time the plea agreement was made, and at the time that Mr. White pled guilty, both the government and the defendant did both believed that he would qualify for safety valve. Ultimately, as we all now know, unfortunately, he did not.
That one extra point, right?
That's correct, one extra criminal history point. The main point that the government would like to make is that Mr. White knew that that was a possibility based on the conditional language in the plea agreement and based on the record of the plea colloquy. Thank you. If there are any further questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I don't think so. Thank you very much. Thank you
very much.
I'll give you a minute if you have anything further to say, Mr. Maximovich.
For the court's information, that one extra criminal history point consisted of Mr. White smoking a marijuana cigarette in Florida. He was arrested. He was held in jail overnight, pled guilty to something he had thought was an infraction. He did not think he was going to get a criminal history point for that. It's
well,
not.
Both of them were bearable.
It was a major mistake on his part, but it's not like we're dealing with public enemy number one here. He's a very, it's not the sharpest tool in the shed. And he just made a mistake. And one of the mistakes he made was entering into this plea agreement. That's basically all I have to say. Thank you.
All right. And you were appointed, Mr. Maximovich?
Yes.
We thank you very much for your assistance to your client and the court. Thank you as well.